This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
Well, Margaret, the Senate has launched another attempt to find ways to dismantle the Affordable Care Act. They put a provision in their tax overhaul bill that would eliminate the individual mandate, which requires Americans to carry health insurance or pay a tax penalty. The GOP leadership are calling this a windfall for Americans, but it's really not that simple.
Well, of course not. And while the removal of the individual mandate would indeed save tax dollars, and that's an estimated $300 billion, there's a reason. An estimated 13 million fewer people would have health insurance within 10 years of eliminating the mandate. And that would indeed save the government some substantial money, but only because they would no longer be covering subsidies for people buying insurance on the exchanges.
And experts also predict another unintended consequence. The elimination of individual mandate would essentially entice younger, healthier people to stay out of the insurance pool, leaving older, sicker people in the coverage pool. And that would ultimately mean much higher rates for everyone.
And of course, also have to remember those people will all become Medicare beneficiaries in not too many years down the road, where we will then be responsible for those higher costs. But Senate Republicans have a narrow margin to get their version passed. Republican Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin has already said that he can't support either the Senate tax overhaul bill or the House version either, saying both proposals favor corporations far more than individuals or small businesses. All it takes is a couple of no's among the GOP, and the bill will not clear the chamber, but still a lot of momentum to get something done before the end of this year.
In the meantime, Margaret, we're in the midst of open enrollment, and the ACA is still the law of the land. People have been signing up in record numbers during the first phase of open enrollment, and that leads us to our guest today.
Joshua Peck is the co-founder of Get Covered America, a nonprofit organization that's made up of former employees of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, all of whom worked on previous open enrollments. And they're offering their collective know-how to help Americans find coverage, especially targeting parts of the country where there's been political resistance to the ACA and little in the way of good information for consumers.
He's aligned some star power and a robust social media campaign to get the word out. Looking forward to that conversation, Margaret, and hearing more about Get Covered America.
And Lori Robertson will stop by, the managing editor of factcheck.org. She is always on the hunt for misstatements spoken about health policy in the public domain. But no matter what topic, you can hear all of our shows by going to chcradio.com.
And as always, if you have comments, please email us at chcradio, chc1.com, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We love hearing from you.
We'll get to our interview with Joshua Peck in just a moment.
But first, here's our producer, Marianne O'Hare, with this week's headline news.
I'm Marianne O'Hare with these healthcare headlines. $504 billion per year. That's the calculated annual toll of the opioid epidemic in this country for 2015 alone. The Council of Economic Advisers just released a report detailing the scope of the economic impact from the opioid epidemic, recalculating earlier estimates after taking into account non-fatal costs of opioid misuse disorder, including healthcare costs, treatment for substance use, and criminal justice and incarceration costs, as well as lost productivity. Based on the new findings, the Council is doing economic analysis of potential interventions to the crisis. While President Trump has declared the opioid crisis an emergency, he has issued no new funding for confronting the problem as of yet. State and local public health officials are strapped for solutions for confronting the crisis, from gaining access to enough Narcan to handle the rising number of overdoses to adequate access to treatment for those suffering with the disorder. Meanwhile, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services is moving ahead with plans to attempt to curtail opioid abuse among Medicare recipients as well as dual-eligible seniors. The rules would restrict special enrollment for the Medicare Part D program and would also allow plans to set up a drug management program for members deemed to be at risk for opioid abuse disorder. Those plans could limit members' access to coverage for opioids to a narrow list of prescribers or pharmacies. Meanwhile, Purdue Pharma, makers of OxyContin, being sued by a number of states municipalities for allegedly pushing the highly addictive narcotic on unsuspecting clinicians and patients without acknowledging their addictive nature. Attorneys general in nine states are moving ahead with lawsuits to recoup losses incurred from the high cost of treating those suffering from addiction, citing the company's aggressive marketing tactics as the primary force behind the rise in opioid abuse and overdose deaths. 60,000 Americans overdosed in 2016 alone, and this year's numbers are expected to go higher. Purdue is reportedly considering a global settlement that would cover all the state and county governments who filed suit, thus avoiding added scrutiny should those cases go to trial. Seniors in the U.S. seem to be the poor relations when compared to their counterparts in 10 other wealthy nations. In fact, they rank last in overall outcomes and experience with the healthcare system. The Commonwealth Fund's 20th International Health Policy Survey revealed that compared to all the other countries which have some form of universal health coverage for citizens, U.S. seniors don't gain that coverage until the age of 65. The study showing they were far more likely to have chronic diseases than their counterparts in other nations, also far more likely to forego medical tests or medications because they simply couldn't afford them here. Conversely, in the UK, France, Norway, and Sweden, 5% or fewer seniors reported skipping needed care due to cost concerns. Meanwhile, for those Americans who are under the age of 65, it's open enrollment for insurance coverage for 2018. For those seeking to purchase it under the Affordable Care Act, according to a Kaiser Family Foundation poll, a full third of Americans had heard nothing about the open enrollment period in their own home states, and almost half said they have definitely heard much less this year. The marketing budget for open enrollment was slashed by 90%. And the open enrollment period was cut in half. Signups during this fifth open enrollment have outpaced signups in all previous years to date. I'm Marianne O'Hare with these healthcare headlines.
We're speaking today with Joshua Peck, co-founder of Get America Covered, a nonprofit entity dedicated to helping Americans gain health insurance coverage under the Affordable Care Act. Prior to starting this agency, Mr. Peck served as chief marketing officer for the Center for Consumer Information and Insurance Oversight and the Office of Communications at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, where he was responsible for the enrollment and retention of healthcare.gov consumers. Previously, he was a senior advisor to CMS and served as deputy director of the new media at the DNC. He earned his bachelor's in education from Brandeis. Josh, welcome to Conversations on Healthcare.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, well, we seem to find ourselves in the midst of a really new kind of open enrollment for insurance coverage under the Affordable Care Act. Open enrollment began November 1st on the federal exchange, healthcare.gov, as well as on a handful of state exchanges. But there's a new twist this year. The enrollment period was cut in half by the current administration, and the marketing funds and navigation supports, which we've all come to rely on, have all been but eliminated under the current administration. And you ran the marketing strategy for healthcare.gov prior to the new administration. Help them understand the complexities of that marketing strategy across the country and what's changed and why are these recent developments so concerning to you and to millions of others?
So the most important thing to keep in mind is that outreach is proven. So we have years of testing that has shown that television ads reminding people about deadlines, that they work, that each of them plays an important role. We know how much it costs to enroll a consumer, which of these kinds of outreach together can enroll different types of consumers. So when the Trump administration announced that they were cutting the outreach budget by 90%, it had a direct and quantifiable impact on what enrollment was going to look like this year. Approximately 1.1 million fewer people would get enrolled by early next year as a result of this cut to outreach. And, you know, that doesn't even take into account the fact that the open enrollment period has been shortened this year. So by cutting it in half from 90 days to 45 days and moving that final deadline to a brand new day, it creates consumer confusion because they're not sure when the deadline is. And when you pair that with cuts to outreach, it really sort of makes the problem even worse.
Well, Josh, there have been so many policy challenges to the health loft, and we certainly remember that first year of open enrollment and really the excitement and the relief that so many people had as they came in for the very first time in decades for some of them. But with all these challenges, we have the latest attempt, the Senate's tax reform bill that would eliminate the ACA's individual mandate requiring Americans to have health coverage or pay a penalty. And we understand the Congressional Budget Office has a pretty clear prediction about what this might do to health coverage for people in the United States. Help us understand from your perspective what this latest legislative attack on the Affordable Care Act might mean, and how do you think it's going to play out?
Well, I mean, this is an attempt to destabilize the market. When you reduce the number of people who are enrolling in coverage, the individual mandate plays an especially important role in making sure that the people who are enrolling in insurance are representative of, you know, society as a whole. And while I certainly am not a fan of the mandate, I wish it wasn't a necessary part of the process. We know that when people understand the role that the mandate plays in getting a balanced group of people to enroll, and the fact that it makes premiums lower for everyone, there's widespread support for it. So what we're seeing is a very specific attempt to undermine the ACA using this particular provision to do it. And, you know, the consequences based on the CBO's estimate would be really, really devastating.
Josh, you know, I think back to the passage of Medicare and Medicaid in the 60s, and I think people realized they weren't perfect pieces of legislation when they were passed. There were many substantive changes that got made over the decades. But I know we had Andy Slavitt, who was former CMS acting administrator on the show, who I also understand is part of your Get America Covered. And he discussed why repairs versus repeal was the best approach. I'm wondering, from your vantage point, you could help our listeners understand what issues with the health law could have been remedied with some targeted strategies.
You know, I had the pleasure of being at CMS for the 50th anniversary of Medicare's passage. What's so different, of course, is that the Affordable Care Act has been really the target of partisan attacks, you know, since day one that haven't let up. And that's not something that Medicare ever experienced. You know, I think that as so many, you know, experts have said, there are plenty of opportunities to, you know, make improvements to the Affordable Care Act. So one is increasing the amount of financial help that's available to people, and whether that's making plans more affordable for lower income consumers, or whether that's making plans for middle class consumers who are just missing the financial help that's available currently, I'm certainly supportive of that. I think making sure that Medicaid expansion continues as planned. It's really tragic, you know, for people who don't make enough money to qualify for financial help, but their state hasn't expanded Medicaid to cover them. For people who fall in that gap, it creates a pretty tragic situation. And, you know, millions and millions of people fall in that gap. So that's something that I would like to see remedied. And then the third would be the public option. One of the things we're seeing in the marketplace is that as insurers are finding their feet, we're not seeing as, you know, as many people in the marketplace to give consumers all of the choices that we'd like to give them. So I think the public option is one way to solve that problem. You know, outreach plays a very important role in the running of the federal marketplace because it not only brings people in, but it helps to ensure a balanced risk pool. And what we're seeing with the Trump administration is that this budget has been, you know, drastically cut. So, you know, one of the recommendations that I would make would be restoring that budget and potentially even increasing it. The California State Exchange put out a paper earlier this year suggesting that the federal exchange was grossly underspending, even when we had the full outreach budget that we did last year, to say nothing of the cut budget this year.
Well, I want to talk about Get America Covered for a moment. We've talked about the great reduction in outreach and marketing, but you're committed to filling that big messaging void around the country, especially in the 39 states that are reliant on the federal exchange. So talk with us about how your team at Get America Covered is canvassing these states or working in these states and the strategy that you're using to get the word out.
So Lori Lotus, my co-founder, when we created Get America Covered, first off, Lori and I worked at CMS together working on outreach and education for the last 3 years. So when we left, we took with us the sort of best practices about what works, what doesn't. We also had a pretty good sense of what cost money. Now, as a nonprofit with a shoestring budget, many of the doors that would have been open to us when we had a $100 million budget our firm leaf shut. So first off, we're putting together basic information for consumers. When is the deadline? How affordable are plans this year? Second, we're working with national and local media to get the word out. This year, that's even more important, and Health and Human Services hasn't been working with media this year almost at all, and we're not seeing the Secretary of Health and Human Services or the administrator of CMS hitting the road to promote open enrollment. That plays an important role in getting the word out. And then we are working with businesses, with celebrities, with influencers to tap into existing networks to share this information organically. You know, our biggest challenge is really staff and resources, going from having sort of the power of the federal government to help get this message out. And the federal government is a far more qualified messenger of this kind of information. We recognize that there are really significant limits to the impact we'll be able to have in this capacity.
We're speaking today with Joshua Peck, co-founder of Get American Covered, a nonprofit entity dedicated to helping Americans gain health insurance coverage under the Affordable Care Act. Mr. Peck served as chief marketing officer for the Center for Consumer Information and Insurance Oversight and the Office of Communications at CMS. You know, Josh, I really couldn't agree with you more that outreach and education are so important. And there's so much about the plans that consumers are not aware of. And I think one of the big ones is that millions of consumers will qualify for a significant subsidy by purchasing insurance on the exchange. And in part because the president has cut off federal subsidies to insurance companies to help them lower the cost for consumers. I wonder if you could break that down and tell consumers about that benefit and what other details like that might be very important for them to understand.
So when people are shopping for health insurance on the federal exchange, we know that the most important factor for them is cost. And in particular, it's the monthly premium. This year, and it's worth saying that people often assume, even before they look, often instead of looking, they assume that health insurance is just too expensive for them or their family. They assume it costs hundreds of dollars a month. And the reality is before the ACA, that was true. And importantly, it's not that what the Affordable Care Act has done, you know, has fundamentally changed how pricing works. What people don't always appreciate is that financial help is available. If you make as much as $49,000, you're typically eligible for financial help. A family of four would be typically eligible for financial help up to about $98,000. I think last year, 8 out of 10 people qualified. And what's important is this financial help brings down the cost of these plans. And so for the last 4 years, most people have been able to find plans for $75 or less. This year, however, because of some of the shenanigans of the Trump administration, there is a very unique phenomenon. For people who receive financial help, on average, prices are lower this year. In fact, they're the lowest they've ever been. And one sort of stunning statistic is that 4.5 million uninsured people can find a plan that costs them $0 a month.
Oh my God.
So, you know, their monthly premium is zero. And many of these are bronze plans, so their deductibles are higher. Mm-hmm. But there's no question that these $0 plans are a far better option than being uninsured. And in some cases, they're the right choice for some consumers. So very, very, you know, large numbers of people have access to plans this year that have very, very low dollar monthly premiums. Go to healthcare.gov to enter your information and find out what you qualify for, because seeing is definitely believing.
Well, Josh, you know, I think I'd slide in one more for people purchasing insurance, which is that those essential preventive benefits that were wired into the Affordable Care Act are available upfront with no copays and no deductibles. And so, Josh, if I can maybe just talk a little more about the social media strategy. You've got some real celebrity power. You've got former President Obama, journalist Van Jones, actors like Alyssa Milano and Bradley Whitford and others offering their social media platforms to help spread the word. Talk about the social media strategy that you're deploying as we enter these final few short weeks of open enrollment.
first off, I'd say our strategy is really born in necessity. We are really dependent on people who have large followings, who are committed and willing to get the word out. So our national co-chairs, Van Jones, Alyssa Milano, Bradley Whitford, they've all really sort of committed to getting the word out about open enrollment. And so the strategy for us is really looking at these final weeks of open enrollment. The last 2 weeks, and frankly, even the last week, are just so especially critical for people. The plan is to really tap into the networks of these celebrities and influencers to reach their followers, to make sure that the uninsured have this very basic information. The final deadline to enroll is December 15th, and most people can find plans for $75 or less. And of course, millions of people qualify this year for a $0 monthly premium.
So that strategy seems to be working. And every day I'm sort of listening to these numbers about people who are enrolling. And I don't want to lull anybody into apathy because it is a short window. But what do you think's driving all these huge turnouts early on? What's your thoughts?
So we're thrilled by the performance we've seen in the first 2 weeks. Looking at new enrollment, cumulatively, I think we're up 53% over last year. That is a great demand for health insurance is incredibly strong. I think that one thing that might explain the numbers is the availability of these low-cost plans. They, I think, are particularly enticing and I think really have the potential to be a game changer this year. However, I think it's also worth saying that, you know, when it comes to those plans, my chief concern is that the uninsured are not aware that they exist. Mm-hmm. But I think one thing that very much is likely helping this year is that. I think the second thing to keep in mind is that we have a long way to go, and it's important that we keep the momentum that we're seeing up. It's also just important to recognize that the impact of outreach, which we led off this discussion with, you know, the sort of recognition that there is a proven connection between outreach and enrollment. So the proven impact of outreach all happens in relatively close proximity to the deadline. And so these first couple of weeks, what we're likely to be seeing is the natural demand. But as we get closer to the deadline, those dynamics could change because we know that that's when outreach has its biggest impact. That's when people are most likely to respond to it. So folks should certainly not get complacent.
We've been speaking today with Joshua Peck, co-founder of Get America Covered, a nonprofit entity dedicated to helping Americans gain health insurance coverage under the Affordable Care Act. You can learn more about their work by going to getamericacovered.org or follow them on Twitter at @GetUsCovered. Josh, thanks for the work you do and for joining us on Conversations on Healthcare today.
Thanks again for having me.
At Conversations on Healthcare, we want our audience to be truly in the know when it comes to the facts about healthcare reform and policy. Lori Robertson is an award-winning journalist and managing editor of FactCheck.org, a nonpartisan, nonprofit consumer advocate for voters that aim to reduce the level of deception in U.S. politics. Lori, what have you got for us this week?
President Donald Trump issued an executive order in October related to the Affordable Care Act. The order instructed the Departments of Labor, Health and Human Services, and Treasury to consider proposing regulations on association health plans, short-term insurance, and employer health reimbursement arrangements. The order said that those items were alternatives to insurance under the Affordable Care Act that's subject to mandates. The ACA requires insurance on the individual or small group market to cover certain benefits and limit out-of-pocket costs. Trump's order also mentioned selling insurance across state lines to, quote, facilitate the purchase of insurance across state lines and to develop healthcare at, quote, affordable prices. We looked at the issue of selling policies across state lines before and what impact it might have on premiums on the individual market, where those without employer plans or government plans like Medicaid buy their own coverage. If insurance companies could sell across state lines and state regulators didn't have to follow ACA requirements, would premiums drop significantly? Joseph Antos, a healthcare expert with the American Enterprise Institute, told us that while there could be some reduction, insurers would still be locked into the cost of health services in a given geographic area. So a cheap plan in an inexpensive locale would still have to be priced higher if sold in a high-cost area. Linda Bloomberg with the Urban Institute said that some people could see a big drop in premiums if insurers significantly curtailed benefits, selling plans without much insurance protection to healthy people. But that would also drive up premiums for those wanting comprehensive insurance and in states that want to have insurance regulations. It's also unclear how much insurers want to sell plans across state lines. Aetna's CEO said earlier this year that the idea is outdated because insurers now are aligned with networks of providers that they create in a certain area. The American Academy of Actuaries said this year that cost savings from negotiating provider networks can be larger than savings gleaned from differences in benefit requirements. But it may be difficult for insurers entering a new state market to negotiate with providers. It remains to be seen what the agency secretaries will propose based on Trump's executive order. And that's my Fact Check for this week. I'm Lori Robertson, managing editor of FactCheck.org.
FactCheck.org is committed to factual accuracy from the country's major political players and is a project of the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. If you have a fact that you'd like checked, email us at chcradio.com. We'll have FactCheck.org's Lori Robertson check it out for you here on Conversations on Healthcare.
Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. Currently, some 30 million Americans have type 2 diabetes, and that number is expected to climb substantially in the coming decades. Patients who were newly diagnosed often find it difficult to process the behavioral change required to keep their disease in check. So Amazon, the creator of the interactive voice technology known as Alexa, and pharmaceutical entity Merck teamed up to launch a competition for developers to create a tool using existing technology that would help folks better manage their diabetes. The winner, SugarPod, developed by Seattle-based startup WellPepper.
The challenge was, how do you help someone newly diagnosed with type 2 diabetes? And we already had interactive care plans for people with type 2 diabetes. They were mobile. And then we thought, well, sure, we can voice enable those care plans, but isn't that what everyone's going to do? So we sat down and brainstormed, and we came up with about 20 different ideas. And what we thought that was the most interesting was this integrated care plan that included a device, which is a voice-powered scale and foot scanner that looks for diabetic foot ulcers. And the reason we went down that path was that we thought that the scale was a nice way of fitting into a routine that someone already had in their day.
CEO Ann Weiler says they were intrigued by the opportunity to incorporate Alexa's voice technology for coaching purposes, along with some simple technologies that exist, but had never been put together, including a scale and an image scanner.
The three components are voice-enabled scale and foot scanner, a mobile care plan, because voice isn't always the best interface. Sometimes you are at work and you don't want to be talking to someone about your symptoms and your side effects. And then a voice interaction that could happen with any sort of Alexa device.
Chief Technology Officer Mike Van Snellenberg said creating a user-friendly interface was important, and they got great feedback from consumers who said they quickly adapted to the SugarPod interface.
Yeah, especially anytime you want to do interventions on people that are already kind of well, you need to have very low touch, lightweight interactions and things that don't interfere with a person's life and can kind of gently nudge them in the right direction. I think voice is a great application for that. It's a device that a lot of people already have in their homes.
Their SugarPod design is essentially an image scanner placed on the top of a scale with an Alexa speaker on the post in front. While weights are measured and feet photographed, Alexa offers suggestions for weight management, diet and exercise goal, and other behaviors that will empower patients to make lasting behavior changes. SugarPod, a simple constructed Alexa-enabled weight and foot ulcer scanner that empowers newly diagnosed diabetes patients to shift their behaviors to better manage their disease, providing a flow of important clinical information for their providers who can benefit from the real-time monitoring of patient health data, leading to better diabetes management for patients and providers. Now that's a bright idea.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from WESU at Wesleyan University, streaming live at WESUFM.org, and brought to you by the Community Health Center.